Conversation by Julie Benetti and Susan Barbaro is a production of EI Publishing in association with EI Alliance, copyright 2018. Visit eipublishing.com for more. Music for this series is courtesy of New Threads, copyright 2018, from their self-titled album, available now.
So, hi, here we are back again, and I just would like to say that, you know, tis the season, it's we're coming up to Thanksgiving, and, you know, everyone's talking about turkeys, and I just wanted to say I've been thinking about you.
Oh, God. What are you, reciting our blotch card?
Oh, my God, I couldn't help it. Sorry. So, in light of that, about turkeys and having fun and Thanksgiving, We're going to talk a little bit about the book, our energetic invocation, Book of Vibrational Change. And we picked a topic that seems to be kind of, you know, been selling a lot of, which is Who Are the People Like Me section. And, you know, what's interesting about it is, you know, I keep wanting to hear, if it's from Sesame Street, who are the people in your neighborhood?
You've been singing that all
day. I know, because it's interesting because so many of us really are a product of the neighborhoods in which we grew up in. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood in outside of Boston in a town, but even within the town, it was delineated. And I hope nobody's offended by this, but I'm Italian, so I'm going to say it used to be called Guinea Village. And now they actually call it the Village. And it's because it was very close knit Italian, actually, and very highly Irish, a big Irish population. This is going back generations. But, you know, so it's interesting if people still resonate here with that definition of being from, quote, the Village, and they say it with pride. And I mean, New England is filled with a lot of people who have pride and like to hold on to tradition and, you know, and where they are, and they take pride in that, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not having an issue with that, but I would like to say that, you know, that's not always beneficial for us to kind of hold on to the definition that we've been given, because, you know, if you grew up in a, you know, back in the day, I think about it when, you know, was the town drunk. If you were the town drunk, nobody wanted to have that title. But if that's what the story you were given, then you kind of...
I like to say that this is Julie living in the year 2000 here. I don't know. You're talking like the 1800s? What are you talking about, the town drunk?
No. But just, you know, everyone was given a... You know, I have to tell this one story. It's funny. And my daughter told me the story, but it's kind of sad at the same time. She was saying that she was at work, and her one of her coworkers said that his son was in school, and they did one of those occupational tests that they take. And she's like, everyone's running around saying, oh my God, look at, I'm supposed to be a scientist. Look at, I'm supposed to be, you know, a lawyer. I'm supposed to be a math teacher. And there was one child that got janitor.
Oh, wow.
And everybody was like, nobody knew what to say, because it was kind of, and you know, my daughter was saying, everyone, they could, even the nobody, you know, you couldn't stop laughing. There's nothing wrong with being a janitor, but it's like such a, you know, and I thought to myself, my God, you know, I would hate to think that someone was given that title and then told as a young child, this is all you can aspire to. So whatever you had in the back of your mind, this is who you are, and this is what you're going to be, and this is how everyone, I mean, I'm going to believe that these kids are probably in elementary school, but when they're in high school, they're probably going to always remember, I remember so-and-so. That's what, you know, they were told that that's the best that they could do.
Well, I think that relates more to the test, those kind of tests versus that, because, you know, my story about janitors are great. I mean, you never know what their backgrounds are. You never know what they're doing. And when I worked at a local college here, actually at Boston University for a little while, this gentleman came in and he was the janitor. And of course, I talked to everybody and I was talking to him, and he was amazed that I was talking to him. Come to find out, no one in the department ever would speak to him because he was the janitor. And I would say about not even a few weeks later, he came in with an industrial-sized cheesecake that was out of this world as a present for me because he was a master chef. He was from South America, and he was a master chef. And he decided the best way to put his kids through school was to work at Boston University work as a janitor, and you know, he would cook for friends and family, and he was so excited that, you know, of course, why wouldn't I be having a conversation with him? And the director of the department was so amazed. This guy that came in all the time was a master chef, and he never knew for 15 years.
I actually have a lot of conversations with people from all walks of life, and I don't have any, you know, preconceived notions about any of that. Where I'm going though is the idea of a janitor is that, you know, if you have a dream, that's where all of a sudden that's the part that I actually, any of those tests. I mean, what if you came out and said, I remember people used to say to me when I was in, you know, when I was younger, you'd be a great lawyer. Cause of course I talk a lot and I'm very determined and I used to go, my father was a police officer, and when he'd have to go to court for whatever case, he'd always, you know, I could take the day off of school, he'd say, come on in, and you could come in, and he'd go off and talk with us, and I'd kind of sit in the courtroom and I'd listen. But anytime you give anyone, it's almost like a psychic saying to you, oh, I see this, well, you create it. And what if, you know, I'm not a lawyer, and I, you know, I don't have anything against lawyers, I mean, I could say the same thing, it's just wasn't what I really wanted to do, for various reasons, which aren't important for this conversation. But I just think, you know, sometimes when you think of a janitor, it's like, you know, anything you wanted to do. And I guess that would transcend anything. And the reason that I even bring some of this up is because it really is in alignment with, you know, when we ask, in quote, who are the people like me?
You know what? People are always posting quotes. You don't even know if they're really true.
Or they're quotes that you've read 10,000 times.
Right, and you're supposed to like them. What about quoting from something different and new?
Now that would be fun.
We did it and took quotes from our Energetic Invocations books, and we put it in a quote book.
They're really good.
How do I live when I don't fit in? You can find it on Amazon. Hey, Susan, you remember that old song that Tom Petty sang?
Which old song?
The waiting is the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was so right about that. The waiting is the hardest part. The coolest thing about all the stuff we've written, you can get it as an ebook right now.
Right
live
now.
On Amazon right now. And you know what they say? There's no time like the present.
And, you know, when we start talking about it is, you know, when you start off, you kind of come with all this, I'll call it baggage or beliefs and ideas of what people have said who you are. And it goes through school and through teachers and coaches and everybody else saying you're good at this or you're not good at that, or and you believe it. And then you go through, you do a lot of the work that we put in the book and basically say, the hell with everybody else. Mm-hmm. I know what I want to do and I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of pull yourself out of the role that you've been given. And then it's actually an interesting concept, because now all of a sudden, you're not who people think you are. They still think you're whoever they've defined you as,
right.
But you're not. And that's kind of, all of a sudden you start walking in this kind of a funny tightrope of like, well, who am I? And then how do I live here when I'm not who they think I am? And the book kind of addresses that. And it's an interesting, because, you know, the first thing that it talks about is getting rid of your story. Whatever your story is. And that's not denying who you are or where you've come from. And this actually relates directly to the Me Too movement. It doesn't deny what happened, and it doesn't say, oh, come on, that really didn't happen. No. But what you do is you kind of say, well, that brought me to this point in time. And I'm not going to hold on to it and play the victim, because that doesn't serve you. And when you're the victim and you call yourself a victim, well, then who has all the power?
Right.
Well, the one that victimized.
Right.
And I refuse. I've had my own situation. I was never abused. I was never victimized in the traditional sense that you think. But someone in my family had something occur, and someone said, you are also the victim. My brother was murdered. I'm not trying to pull up. And it's like, no, you were a victim too. And I was like, no, I'm not a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, getting over the story is understanding it got you to where you are. And I personally reflect on certain things in my life and realize that it got me to a place where I am today. But I don't go back and say anybody owes me anything.
Right. And story can be a helpful but also a harmful concept, because you can get oversaturated in your own story. And oftentimes, and it's very valuable in this chapter, who are the people like me, because oftentimes you can get oversaturated in your story because other people keep you in that story by the conversation. And, you know, we've all experienced this. You work somewhere and you keep on going in, and all of a sudden they, you know, start picking on who's the bully and who's the manager you don't like. And, oh yeah, he's terrible. And you get in this whole conversation. And then the next day it's the same conversation, and people get oversaturated in the story, and you never move ahead. You never get out of the story. And stories can be useful from the extent where you can understand why that is your story or what you can glean from it, yet you can move from it, that you don't have to hold on to that story. You can move into another space and grow and learn from it. Some people don't want to. That's their own choice.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm being a little bit, this is where we talk about self-care, not selfish. Right. I'm not telling anyone what to do. Mm-hmm. I know what works for me. And I'm sharing this. And that's the beauty of this. This is a sharing. If you don't agree, turn it off, walk away, go and get a fireball cocktail and relax, do whatever you want to do and live in it. Some people are happier that way, and more power to them. I personally don't like it. I don't like that feeling that someone else has decided for me who I'm going to be, what my background's going to be, and where, you know, it's like where you fit in the rank of rank and file. And I don't like that. So, I mean, one of the things that, you know, I think is important is, you know, the first thing we talk about is getting past your story. First of all, recognizing that it's a story. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh my God, I've got bad luck or this.
Right.
It's a story. And then next is to determine how you define your relationship. And at what point do you want to continue with that story or not?
Right.
And then work for the clarity to choose who you are in relation to their story. So you might say, oh, I'm a sister, I'm a aunt, I'm a cousin, I'm a daughter. But really, what are you in their story? Mm. You know, that doesn't define you in a role. People think, oh, you're a sister or you're a daughter. Therefore, this is who you have to be.
Right. Right. And sometimes it's just equating yourself to a catalyst or an enabler. And is that really what you choose to be in that story?
Mm. And, you know, when you have that clarity and you understand what people are doing it because they have their own stories that they're trying to perpetuate and they want to keep alive, and they need you to play a certain role. And your responsibility isn't to go and break down their story and tell them you're not, the role is for you within yourself to understand, I'm not that person. And you don't have to say a word to them. You just live your life. You just don't contribute. It's like playing a game of cops and robbers, you know, when you're a kid. Okay, I'm going to be the robber. You have to be the cop, or vice versa. And you're like, I'm not playing. Yeah, you're going to be the cop and I'm going to be the robber. And they just start playing. And you're like, I don't want to play. And then they bully you. And then you're like, okay, now you're playing and now I'm chasing them, or blah, blah, blah. It's a kid's game, but it's very similar to what I think we still do. And I'm going through the book and I'm just reading, like, the fifth one is, with new clarity, create your own story, one that works for you. Right. You decide what it is. And your own story can simply be, like, you and I, Julie, sit down and say, you know, we're working with the energy. It's not even about people. It's about the energy. And we go where the energy leads us. That becomes my new story. I'm working hand in hand with the energy.
Right. And when you start to do that, you start to find yourself around others that inspire you and kind of help you to a better and clearer awareness about what you're doing, what your beliefs are. You know, is this a story you want to participate in and what you want to do with it? And you start to have the right people around you that do that.
Sometimes they do. And sometimes if it's all, I mean, I'm going to sit there and say perspective. You could sit there and say, well, maybe these people, I mean, you're going to look, the same people that bullied you into doing certain things are still going to be there. But all of a sudden, the bullying has no impact because you understand the truth behind it. And they may still be bullying, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're being bullied. And so when I think about that, it goes into finding who the people are like you. And I think what we talk about perspective, because you and I have had this conversation a lot. And we always use the contrast, looking at a picture. You know, do you see the details? Or do you see the background? And what you focus on, for the most part, I would say for most people, is the details, right? You look at the details of a picture.
It depends, yeah.
But then you change the perspective, and now you start seeing the background more. The background comes to the forefront. And I think that's when you start finding people like you.
Well, that's based in the perception.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and if we look at who are the
Well,
people, go
you
ahead.
know, the funny thing about that is too, is that you're working to reach clarity and create your own story. So you're basically inspiring yourself, you're motivating yourself, you're empowering yourself, which is why wouldn't you be doing that if you have self-care? So you're working to do that. So of course your perception is changing, and what you're perceiving, what the volume that's raised on what's around you and what's going on is different than what was before when you were just in a B player in someone else's story because they wanted to keep you in that, or you were just staying in whatever story it was, if it was your own. But when you reach that clarity, as your perception changes, I mean, that's when the people like you start to show up. And, you know, again, you still have to work through that. It's not like, oh, great, these are them and
Yeah.
that's it.
Well, because what I was going to say is that the biggest problem I find, because I always talk, if you ever hear any of the other podcasts, I'm always the biggest complaint is the stay factor. I can sit here, I can read this, I could get inspired. I read a lot of things, I can watch something and I pick up on that and I get into the space of knowing the truth or knowing my truth and I move with it. But then life kind of grounds you and you get something, you go somewhere and someone says something and you're like, oh, and you get out of it again. And you have to get yourself back into it. And so I think that part of finding the right people, they're always there. They're always around. The problem is keeping the right perspective for yourself.
Hey, Julie, do you remember the old Tootsie Roll Pop commercial? It's how many bites does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop? Oh,
Yes.
okay, you do remember that.
How many rings does it take to get someone to answer the door on Halloween?
Depends on if you have candy or not.
Well, how many clicks does it take to get the Halloween trivia ebook?
Just a one.
Just a one. Get yours today.
Hey, it's Julie here, and we have to do this interruption really quick because we only have a couple of seconds because we're interrupting some good content, wouldn't you say?
I'd say.
And what are we interrupting for? That was too long of a gasp. We're interrupting to say we have ebooks, books, and podcasts galore.
Julie, you don't do trivia like everybody else.
Oh no. I started with the Christmas trivia book because I found all this really interesting Christmas content, and so I started making really fun questions, stuff that nobody else has asked.
But you didn't stop there.
Nope. I'm working on Halloween, Samhain, and trivia on magic in Salem, and love trivia that's going to be a bit X-rated.
You have another one.
Yes, we worked on it together, the Kybalion trivia, and anyone who's heard our podcast or read The Kybalion by Three Initiates? You gotta get this. It's an ebook, it's on Amazon.
And we might end up thinking about the Kybalion in ways that you would never have imagined.
And that's the purpose of trivia, because it works at your brain, mind, consciousness, and gets you in all types of cool energy to propel from. And isn't that what we like to do?
It is.
And also reaching clarity. To do that and to acknowledge, you know, who, you know, what your beliefs are, what you're doing, you know, what the story is or isn't, you know, to really come clear, almost make things black and white as to what your participation level is.
And so the reason we, when Julie and I sat down and decided, you know, what are we gonna, we want to do a podcast. And, you know, what was interesting is you said this like two or three times that this, you know, the, who are the people like you, this keeps popping up. As these are, this is this seems to be the section that's selling the most of lately.
Right.
And which to me, what that means is not like, oh, okay, good, let's talk about it. It's more like people are searching for people like themselves. That's where I go with this is like, how do you find more people like yourself? And you know, and we started off talking about little neighborhoods and everything else. And I think there are so many people that are like you. If you come out and be who you are, that brings that out in the people even around you. Mm. And that doesn't mean they're consistent, mm-hmm. but it does come out because we talk about that. We talk about that when we're doing this. It's like, with the, you know, we go outside and all of a sudden people come and they tell us things. And it's like, they're very much in alignment with where we are. And if we're thinking about something or talking about something, it pops up around us. And I think it's a matter of being clear of what your perspective is. And, you know, and I really think people really want, you know, I think the one thing that we try to do is just be authentic. I mean, you can like me or not like me. Like you or not like you. Mm. I mean, you got a goofy hat on, but I don't say anything, you know?
Keeps me warm.
But it's a situation of that's, I think that's what's important is the more that we are ourselves, other people come and just feel comfortable to be themselves. And I think that's really all that it is. Right. I don't look for people to be any particular way other than be authentic.
Right. And when you open up to that, and you know, it's funny, you're asking me why I'm looking at my phone, because right before we started this, I looked on Twitter and I noticed that The Good Place, which is a great show on TV, they note that it continues to be extremely relatable. And we were talking about familiarity before, and the extremely relatable part about, you know, the people who are the people like me and how do you connect and interact and find them and stuff. That's, you know, that relates to what you were talking about with authenticity and how something strikes you and how it inspires you and it keeps you in that flow.
And so I think the only thing I expect, and this is just me, but the one thing that I expect from people is just to be who they are. None of us are perfect. I don't expect perfection from anyone, but I can see, I can't help it anymore. I can see right through when someone's lying to me. I can see right through when someone's not being authentic as to who they are. And it's the most...
Me too.
Yeah. And it is really the most unattractive quality in a person. If someone has got all these issues they're working through, but they're honest about it, I have a little bit more compassion. And I just think more and more people want the same thing, especially right now. And like I said, you get bullied. Me too. Well, what's me too? I've been victimized. Well, great. So everybody sat, you know, it's the old story. If everyone jumps off the London Bridge, are you going to jump off too? And it comes down to, okay, great. You know, not great. I have compassion, believe me. But you got to work to empower yourself and never allow it to happen again.
Right.
Saying I'm a victim, poor me, look what's happened. Well, you're just creating a vicious circle where it continues. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in continuing a poor behavior. Mm-hmm. I'd rather nip it in the bud. And to do it, I have to say, you know, whatever happened brought me to this point, never again. Mm-hmm. And never again doesn't mean I'm going to cry me too. It means I know who I am and I'm powerful and I'm not moving in that space.
And that's a really big space to start from, of what you said about knowing who I am. Because if you don't know who you are, how are you going to find out who the people like me are?
Right, that's
so
true.
So you're finding the people that aren't are almost like you.
Or
the people that
worse,
are...
you are finding people like you.
Right, but that's
you
not
don't
you.
Know who you are.
Exactly.
And you're pretending to be someone, so there you go.
Right.
Who are you bringing in?
Exactly, those are the people showing up. So there you go, you're kind of getting what you're marketing there for.
So... my plea and our goal is I consistently work at it being myself, because, you know, we all have our moments when we're told you're this, you're that, you're blah, blah, blah. And I start to get to a point where I know who I am. I don't need to prove it to anybody.
And that's the stay factor.
Exactly. And that is at the end of the day. You know what? And here's the last piece of it. Why doing that is so important. For those who are do-gooders and, oh, I can't take care of me. I got to take care of everyone else. If you really want to take care of everyone else, you need to take care of yourself. Because when you are empowered, everybody you see around you, doesn't matter their skin color, their religious beliefs, their creed, where they come from, anything, you see the person, the core of the person. And that is the most empowering thing you can do for somebody else.
Mm. I agree. That's powerfully stated. And this volume itself in the book, Energetic Invocation Series, A Book of Vibrational Change, volumes 1 to 17, it's just so complete in how it deals with all the different parts, and it kind of throws them all in there, even though it's in, what is it, part four?
Oh,
I believe it's in part,
people?
Yeah, it's in the part of people.
Yeah,
it's
just
in part
before
three.
World.
It's in part three, people. Yet it deals with, you know, yourself, your journey.
Talks about
the
happiness.
People, the world.
And Oprah, we have a podcast for you. And I saw in O Magazine, it's what makes you happy. That is the worst word. That is the worst word, because I challenge anyone, please send me an email. Send, you know, join us at EI Publishing. Tell me what makes you happy. And I will tell you where you're wrong. I will tell you where you are wrong, because nobody knows, because happiness, you can't even define happiness for me.
Well, that's a trick question. So
exactly. And it's actually, not only is it a trick question, the reason why I get upset about it is because it is a stifling question.
It is.
Because no matter who you are, I don't care how much money you have, how powerful you think you are, you can't define happy. And if you can't define happy, you will never find yourself happy. So when someone says, happy pappy, you have already lost. And you have to look at it differently. We talk about that in some of the other stuff about really what is happiness. So anyways, happy pappy tonight?
Happy pappy.
Thanks for listening.
This has been a production of EI Publishing in association with EI Alliance. Listen to other episodes and visit eipublishing.com to find more energized podcasts and books. Find New Threads' self-titled album, New Threads, on iTunes, Spotify, Bandcamp, or at newthreads.us. Thank you for listening.